Two Es Serios by Francois Cooper, sung by Judith Nelson, with the Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Christopher Hogwood. And so this edition of Sunday Morning draws to a close. Next week, I have a Christmas cantata by Alessandro Scarlatti. Musical Speed Demons provide my theme from 10 until 11, and my chosen piano variations are by Hindemith and Fauré. So do please join me, same time, next Sunday morning at 9 o'clock.
Sunday Morning with Rob Cowan is a unique production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this morning by Neil Miners. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's just after midday and it's time now for Private Passions. Michael Barclay's guest today is the singer-songwriter Laura Mvula.
At 26, Laura Mvula is a real rising star. Just this autumn, she won Best Soul Artist and Best Female Act in the MOBO Awards, the Music of Black Origin. She played the main stage at Glastonbury this summer, and Radio 3 listeners will know her from her appearance in the first Urban Classical Prom. Her debut album, Sing to the Moon, was released earlier this year and rose to number 9 in the charts. And she was nominated for the prestigious Mercury Music Awards this year. So a huge amount of critical acclaim, Laura. The critics actually have compared you, which must be rather daunting, with Nina Simone and Billie Holiday. No pressure there, then?
There's loads of pressure there.
But what many of your fans may not realise is that you actually began in the classical music world. You studied musical composition at the Birmingham Conservatoire. Yeah. And I wonder how important classical music is to you now and whether you still listen to it.
Absolutely. I grew up listening to lots of classical music. I decided quite young that I wanted to study piano and violin, and my parents were really encouraging of that. And I fell in love instantly with composers like Elgar and Michael Tippett, and even compositions from local composers in Birmingham that we would play in the training ensembles. Great opportunities.
You mentioned the piano just now, and the first piece is indeed a piano piece. Did you play this?
Yes, I did. I feel like I should say I attempted to play this. I actually played it for my A-level recital. It was the first piece I committed to memory, which shook me, actually. And I remember starting the piece in the performance, and sort of in the 8th bar, I went entirely blank. And my parents were there. There was an audience. Yeah, it was disastrous. But I loved the piece. And it was the first opportunity I had to play. I tried ragtime before, but this was my first opportunity to play, you know, with my hands sort of all over the piano. That's what it felt like to me, anyway.
It's Debussy's Gollywog's Cakewalk.
I was just captivated by the music. And, that opening phrase was just, you know, I'd play it over and over again, driving everybody at home mad.
It's a fabulous piece, actually. It's such fun to play.
It is so much fun. I just had another memory of... I think I played it for one of my auditions for the conservatoire as a second study, piano. And I was very pleased with myself. And the teacher said, "Why are you bashing the piano?" And I was mortified. I think I even cried in that lesson. But yeah, fabulous piece. It's good to hear it again.
We heard Angela Hewitt, I suppose not bashing the piano there, but playing Golliwog's Cakewalk, the last movement from Debussy's Children's Corner Suite. Didn't that inspire one of your own songs, that piece?
Yes, it did. I said the one of the chords, I forget, I don't really know what bar it is in the piece, but it's sort of a substitute harmony. We get a new harmony with the melody. And this chord, I don't know, something about it set me alight. And so I made the decision to improvise with it in my flat on the piano. And then this song, Make Me Lovely, came out of it. Surprisingly, naturally, and I say that because I think it sounds different to any other song on the album. I think when my mum heard this song, she said, "Oh, you sound a bit angry." But yeah, I wanted to make something that sounded dissonant and strange, but somehow resolved in a beautiful way, hopefully.
Well, let's hear a little bit of it. Music from Make Me Lovely, a song by my guest, Laura Mvula. I think Debussy would have been very flattered.
Oh, that's kind of you to say. That's a really sweet thing to say.
Your whole family's musical, as you said, mm-hmm. but they were rather concerned about you listening to pop. They didn't really approve of pop music, did they?
The pop music in our household was just monitored, really. We weren't sort of allowed to listen to whatever. And I just remember a specific incident when I came home from school. I was probably in year 3 or 4, and I was singing boom, 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 I want you in my room to spend the night together. And my dad quietly pulled me aside and asked me where I'd learnt the song. And I think, yeah.
Was it a religious household?
Yes, yes, it was. I grew up in a Christian household, which meant that musically, the musical traditions that I grew up listening to in the church were hugely influential. And I was fortunate because I attended different church services. So I grew up in a Pentecostal church. And there they might sing contemporary Christian music or traditional hymns. When I went to university, which in Birmingham, is right in the city centre, I started going to services at the cathedral. So then I would hear a lot of the choral music that I hadn't even heard before. All this beautiful liturgy was so moving. And then I grew up with services, with congregations that are Black Caribbean or, you know, predominantly Black Caribbean.
And your aunt had an a cappella choir.
Yes, my aunt musically directs Black Voices, who are an a cappella quintet. And I was lucky enough when I was about 10 to start going touring with them.
Despite that, though, you've often said that you find performing on stage quite nerve-wracking and you don't necessarily always enjoy it.
That's the only one thing throughout my music education that I really struggled with. I don't really know what it's to do with. I remember one time getting up in church to sing with a church choir. I probably was about 10 or 11. And I sang at the top of my voice. I enjoyed the performance. And then right at the end, the congregation's applause was so rapturous and loud that it totally overwhelmed me and I started to cry. But I cried really loudly and to the point where my parents had to come and take me down from the platform. And I remember that so clearly as a moment for me. And I didn't want to go back on the stage.
It's very touching. It's Elgar next.
Yes.
I think it's a piece you have played on the violin this time.
Yeah, I feel so lucky to be able to say that. As soon as I learnt that I could have lessons on violin at my school, I begged my parents, please can I have these violin lessons? My friends are going through the Abracadabra violin book and playing all sorts of fantastic things. I want to be a part of this. And they said, okay. And I got my first three-quarter size violin. One of the pieces that I eventually was able to play, having joined a string orchestra, was this Elgar piece, Introduction and Allegro.
It's a wonderfully sort of stringy piece, isn't it,
yeah,
in that English sense?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's so romantic as well. I remember listening to it a couple of weeks ago in a car, one of my boring London car journeys, and just weeping at probably about 9:30 in the morning, just because I find Elgar's music deeply touching.
Thank you. Music from Elgar's Introduction and Allegro. We heard the strings of the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Vernon Handley. From school, Laura Mavula, as you said, you went to the Birmingham Conservatoire in 2004. Mm-hmm. And you had a teacher, the composer Joe Cutler. Mm. And I think you've chosen some of his music next.
What Joe taught me was sort of a rampant optimism. I could come to a lesson with five chords and no faith in those five chords, and then come away from a lesson with Joe feeling as though there was endless possibility with that. I think that's a gift he has. And yeah, I just had so much support from him throughout. And my final recital was an idea that he had, which was to write all songs, but he insisted that I perform the songs, which was a new idea for me. And I had said to him there was no way I was singing in the recital hall at the conservatoire, but he has his very persuasive ways, very gently persuaded me, and I'm glad I did. Anyway, I came across this piece, Music for Cello and Strings. It moves me again in a really deep place and reminds me of him.
Music for Cello and Strings by Joe Cutler, Laura Mavula's composition teacher. And we heard it played there by Robin Michael and the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood. You started while you were at the Conservatoire, Laura, going, I think, to choral concerts. But it has to be said that there might have been an ulterior motive for this.
Yeah, I had an agenda. Yeah, I met my husband at the Conservatoire, who has an amazing voice. I wasn't just captivated by his voice. And so to try and impress him, I started going to all of his concerts, all of his chamber choir concerts.
That's a very good start.
Which is a great start. Mm. But it meant that I was discovering music that I hadn't heard before. And I think I'm right in saying I either heard his choir sing this next piece or he introduced it to me in one of our listening sessions in the library or something. I guess I kind of fell in love with him and Eric Whittaker's music at the same time.
I thank you, God, for most this amazing day, by Erica Whittaker. And we heard Polyphony, directed by Stephen Layton. So, Laura, you married your fellow student, Themba
Mvula.
He's a classical baritone.
That's right.
I wonder whether you ever sing together, or if you combine your voices.
No. I get asked this a lot. Maybe one day I'll convince him to sing with me. But I think, you know, our styles of singing are so different.
We're going to hear Michael Tippett's Concerto for Double String Orchestra next. This is another wonderful string sound, English string sound, don't you think?
There's a theme for me. Yes.
It also makes you want to dance.
Yeah, it does. This piece was like my breakfast music. I remember when I was studying it for A-level, I would put it on in the morning and just feel like I could do anything. I listened to this the same way I'd listen to a piece of soul music.
Well, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what the label is. It just matters that you love it, doesn't it? It speaks to you.
That's how I feel. I don't see the necessity for the genres. And I think, actually, genres can confuse people. I've often found when people ask me about my album and what music is it, I think I mislead people if I say, oh, it's sort of jazz, soul-ish, but there are orchestral elements in it. So, yeah, it's just my music, my songs. This piece by Michael Tippett was definitely an important piece for me and definitely makes me want to dance.
Thank you.
Sir Neville Mariner, conducting the Academy of St Martin in the Fields, playing the first movement, Allegro con Brio, from Michael Tippett's Concerto for Double String Orchestra. Leaving music school, Laura, can be such a difficult time, and like so many musicians, I think you struggle to find work and to try and get a commission even to write a piece as a composer. But you did write a piece for the Lichfield Community Choir.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right, Lichfield Gospel Choir. I wrote a piece for them, but because I got so excited, I think I tried to write the most complex thing I could write, forgetting that people were going to sing this and it needed to be enjoyable. Anyway, Lichfield Gospel Choir were very gracious with me and patient and did their best with this piece. I think even those moments that feel very exposed and difficult are so important as a composer. You know, that ultimate moment when you workshop a piece of music that you've written and you might think in your head works perfectly, and then you hear it on voices and you go, oh, okay. This moment doesn't work as well. And the opposite can happen as well.
Yeah. That's quite right. And apart from anything else, the thing about writing for voices is that one must always remember they have to pitch things and rhythms are tricky. And
Right.
It's not straightforward, is it?
It's not. And oftentimes if you're writing something for more than one voice, obviously I am not a baritone, so it's very...
No, you don't look like a baritone. We'll leave that to your husband.
Right. So sometimes it's hard to simulate in your mind what it might be like for another voice to sing something you've written.
Your big breakthrough really came when you sent a demo to the record producer Steve Brown and he got back to you.
That was a surprise, a wonderful surprise.
Because at the time you were working at the Birmingham Symphony Hall,
yeah,
weren't you?
I was working for the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra as a receptionist in their rehearsal space and offices in Birmingham, which was great. But it was frustrating to be around wonderful music all the time and feeling like you had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this one rare Monday it was, I had taken a lunch break and I got this email. I was eating a banana. I remember the detail because it was this important to me. And Steve Brown sent this lovely short email back just saying that he'd listened to a couple of my demo songs and really liked them and wanted to know if I had written any more, which of course the answer was no, and wanted to know what my plans were. And from there, I wrote much more and then eventually went down to his studio in London to record.
Did you finish The Banana?
I did finish The Banana. You know, at the time, I wasn't really aware of what that moment would go on to mean. So I thought, oh, this is nice. This is really nice. This is positive. This composer, producer, comedian has gotten back and said some lovely things about my music. Great. Finish The Banana. Go back to work.
You've written music about your parents' divorce and other personal experiences. Do you find that one, in the best sense of the word, sort of feeds off the kind of turbulence in one's private life?
Yes. And that's what my album was. This was a first experience for me, writing straight out of deep pain and chaos. And it was the best thing that I think I did.
And in a way, you're very lucky to have that outlet.
Mm.
Because it's cathartic, isn't it?
Yes.
Of course, Nina Simone, who we mentioned earlier, is a wonderful example of that.
Yes. I was delighted when Black Voices asked me to compose a jazz suite for them. And on the list of artists and composers whose music they wanted to cover, Nina's name came up. And actually, at that point, I hadn't listened to much of Nina Simone. And so I began sort of digging through and discovered this song, Four Women. There's a version that I don't even know where she's performing at, but she looks, Nina Simone looks amazing. You can find this on YouTube. And she has this amazing, huge band, and there's a sea of people outside somewhere. And this bass riff starts, and there's a sort of a hush that goes over the audience. And she's stunning.
Black, my arms are long, my hair is woolly, my back is strong, strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. My name is Aunt Sarah. Aunt Sarah. Skin is yellow, my hair is long, between two worlds I do belong. My father was rich and white, he forced my mother late. What do they call me? My name is Sophronia. My name is Sophronia. Sweet.
tough.
Nina Simone singing Four Women from her 1966 album Wild Is the Wind. And of course she also plays the piano, and that wonderful bass was played by Lyle Atkinson. It's marvellous the way she keeps that controlled until the last verse, isn't it?
And yeah.
Great bass line too, yeah. Which kind of just sounds ominously there all the time,
mm-hmm.
and propelling everything.
Yeah, it's sort of hypnotic.
Another choral piece next, William Walton. And is this, Laura, the influence of your husband again?
Possibly. yes. I think this is one that we listened to in the car. The first car that we had was a Citroen Saxo, our beloved Citroen Saxo. And we would blast this out, mainly when he picked me up from work, from reception. There's just so much groove in this. Maybe that sounds like an odd thing to say about this piece of music, but every time I hear it, I end up bopping my head as though I'm listening to any other piece of music that I might bop my head to. It's glorious and powerful, and actually made me fall in love with the organ, actually. I think the organ scared me as a kid. But, yeah, I love this piece of music.
Thank you.
Jubilate Deo by William Walton, performed by the Finzi Singers, accompanied by Andrew Lambston at the organ and directed by Paul Spicer. Another hero now, Miles Davis, and I think it's something you heard when you were a child.
Yes, I would have heard it as a child, but probably didn't take it in the same way I did when I heard it as a teenager. And one of my cousins, my cousin who sings in the group Black Voices, came round one day. She usually has fabulous clothes, so I assume she was coming round to give me another great hand-me-down of a handbag or something. But instead she said, oh, I picked this up at the supermarket and I thought of you. Here's this album. And I actually put it down for a couple of weeks and didn't think about it, and then put it on maybe one Sunday afternoon, which tended to be listening time. And ever since, I think I've played this album at least two or three times a week. The piece that I've chosen is the one that tends to put me in a place where I am genuinely far away and I sort of lose sense of time. I think it has been called the greatest jazz album of all time, although I know lots of my jazz friends who will dispute that. For me, it doesn't really matter. This is a piece of music that I think will stay with me till the grave.
Extraordinary thing, Laura, is that in three pieces you've had that very simple bass, just repeating a little riff in the Cutler, in Nina Simone, and now again with Miles.
Yeah, right. It's extraordinary.
That was Flamenco Sketches by Miles Davis and Belevens, and we heard extraordinary lineup: John Coltrane, Cannonball Adderley, Paul Chambers and Billy Cobb from the 1959 album Kind of Blue. You took part in a prom, Laura, and I must say it's very encouraging to have someone like you taking this interest and actually just speaking enthusiastically about an interest in classical music. I mean, it makes other people realise there's so much to explore.
Yes, and that's what it is, isn't it? And that's, I think, what my parents and my music teachers were so keen for me just to recognise as a kid, that with music there is just so much to explore, and that's a great thing, and you can set about exploring. And
forget the barriers.
And forget the barriers. We don't even have to talk about the barriers. And that's what happened for me and for my brother and sister. For us, music is a language that we enjoy expressing with one another. And that's the point. And it doesn't really matter what it is. And so, yeah, in that sense, I like to spread the word. And, you know, I appeared in the proms because I wanted to support that idea, to get rid of this nonsense of the feeling that there is sort of an inaccessibility to certain music.
Or highbrow and lowbrow.
Or highbrow, lowbrow, whatever. No.
On that negative, positive note, or positive, negative note.
That's me.
Can I say thank you very much, Laura Mvula?
Thank you.
Michael Barclay was talking to Laura Mvula, and you might like to know you can download that programme and others from the series. Just go to the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website for details. The programme was produced by Francis Beer, and the series is a Loftus production for BBC Radio 3. Next week, Michael's guest is the film director Tom Hooper. That's at the same time next Sunday, midday.
A service for Advent with carols. BBC Radio 3 takes you to the Chapel of St John's College, Cambridge, and a carol service where the liturgy looks forward to the celebration of the Nativity and beyond to the coming of Christ's kingdom, including the first performance of a new carol by Gabriel Jackson. The run-up to Christmas begins. A service for Advent with carols live from Cambridge this afternoon from 3 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 on FM. We're on digital radio, and you can listen to us live online in high-definition sound. Just gone 1 o'clock, time for the news read by Katrina Young.
A service has been held at Glasgow Cathedral for the victims of the police helicopter crash on Friday night. Police Scotland Chief Constable Sir Stephen House was at the service, along with the Scottish Deputy First Minister Nicola Sturgeon. Police have named one of the 8 people who died when the helicopter crashed into a packed pub. Gary Arthur was 48 and from Paisley. It's been reported locally that the pilot of the helicopter, David Trail, and Kirsty Nellis, a police officer on board the aircraft, also lost their lives. 12 people are in hospital with serious injuries. Lawyers for a Nigerian asylum seeker have confirmed that he's back in the UK after a failed attempt to deport him. Issa Mwazu was put on a plane on Friday, but the aircraft is reported to have been turned back by the Nigerian authorities. Mr. Mwazu has been on hunger strike, claiming he can't return to Nigeria because he's being threatened by the militant Islamist group Boko Haram. 4 people have died in Thailand during anti-government protests in the capital, Bangkok. Riot police used tear gas and water cannon against demonstrators trying to storm government offices. The protesters say they want to topple the Prime Minister, Yingluck Chinawat, whom they accuse of taking orders from her exiled brother, Thaksin. The Chancellor, George Osborne, has said consumers will see their energy bills reduced by an average of £50 a year as a result of changes being made by the government. A subsidy for poorer families, which is currently funded through people's bills, will be met instead out of general taxation. An MP is to raise the case of a woman who he says has had her baby forcibly removed by caesarean and taken by social services. The Liberal Democrat MP John Hemming, the chair of the campaign group Justice for Families, says the woman, who's from Italy, was sedated after authorities in Essex obtained a court order. Essex Social Services say they won't comment on ongoing cases. And the weather, it'll be dry and mainly cloudy, with the best of any sunny intervals in the east. There'll be some patchy light rain in the far north. And that's the BBC News and Weather.
And it was read by Katrina Young. And so to the Radio 3 lunchtime concert, this one recorded last March at LSO St Luke's in London, host to a good many Radio 3 lunchtime concerts over the years. The players are the Nash Ensemble in just the one piece, Schubert's Magnificent Octet, music from 1824, so a work of Schubert's rich maturity and a kind of 19th century survivor of the 18th century serenade. The octet radiates warmth and Viennese Gemütlichkeit, although there are those typical Schubertian shadows that pass across the score.